Okay, so we're back to the regular flow of the book. I wanted to just spend a little. I probably when I lectured on 4.1, it wasn't really a high priority in your minds because you're thinking about the midterm. So I thought I'd just go like very quickly back and review the main idea in 4.1, and then go into 4.2. Okay. Are there any questions before I jump in? Yeah. So like I said, midterms, I'll get back on Tuesday, and I'll talk about like the curve and all kinds of stuff like that. But any what's expected value? I haven't graded enough of the exams to get any kind of as a statistician to get sort of an idea based on data to get an estimate, but I guess if I were just going to guess, I think the average is probably in the mid to high 50s, I would say. That would be my guess. Yeah, out of 100, yeah. That'd be my guess. What do you think? You looked at it? Yeah. Yeah, so Mike said that's historically, that's typical. SD? 17? I don't know. I'm just guessing. Yeah, like I said, I haven't graded enough exams to really have a very good idea of how people are doing. Okay. So, all right. So yeah. So let me review section 4.1, right, real quick. It's about density function. So density function we're talking about continuous random variables. So when we talk about discrete things, pretty much everything on the midterm was discrete except for normal curve. Okay. So once we hit continuous things, rather than thinking of like the probability that x is equal to some value, doesn't really make sense in with a continuous random variable because the probability that x is equal to one particular value for a continuous random variable is zero, right? It's sort of it's if you think about choosing a random number between 0 and 1, right? Sort of any real number between 0 and 1, the chance that I randomly pick 0.375 or something like that is zero, right? I could get any number, any real number. So the chance of any, so we're talking about intervals rather than specific values. So I'm drawing this roughly to look like the normal curve, but density function can sort of have any shape. And if you want to think about being in some very small interval, thinking about this left point as being x, the right point being x plus dx, and obviously, dx is kind of arbitrarily small. If you want to think about being in there, the way we kind of think about that is that the height, f of x, is the density function. So the density function is the height in that picture. And if you want to think about what the area means, the area is the probability, like this little sort of shaded area in here, is the probability that x, this is often the way it's written, the probability that x is in that little dx. If you wanted to, you could write that as, to be a little bit more thorough, you could say the probability that x is in the interval x plus dx. Okay, but this little dx here is just shorthand for that little tiny interval. Okay, and then the way we would think about that is that it's going to be the height times the width, basically. Okay? So we're kind of treating it as though it's just a little skinny rectangle, right? Okay, so that's an idea that I think is really important. the idea that if you want to think about this infinitesimal probability that x is in some little interval, you can think of it as the height times the width. This is the density function times that little width dx. That's a common way to think about solving for f of x. We're sort of used to thinking about probabilities. So if we could figure out this kind of a probability intuitively or somehow, then if we divide it by dx, we get the density function. Okay, so that's sort of, like I say, a fairly common way to think about how to find the density function for something. All right, so the sort of consequence of this, all this, is that then the total area is the area under the function. So it's the integral from minus infinity to infinity of f of x dx, and it has to be 1. And if you want to think about how this relates to discrete random variables, this is just like saying that if you add up all the probabilities for something discrete, you have to get 1, right? So we're taking the probability of being kind of everywhere has to be 1. Okay, so that's just quickly a little review of the main ideas in 4.1. Any questions or thoughts about this? Okay, so the examples that I went through, whenever it was, a week and a half ago or something, uniform is like one common example. So you can think of uniform between 0 and 1 is a very common one that people look at, or between A and B is a little bit more generic. And then the normal curve is another one that we talked about a fair amount. And then there's some other like little examples, but those are the main ones, uniform and the normal that we dealt with. So ...4.2 is my favorite section in the book. It's my favorite. So Mike and I have this little running joke that we've been around this book for a while, I at some point observed that the problems were sort of interesting and difficult enough that I gained the you sort of, when you solve a problem you haven't solved before, you get this kind of light bulb, and it's kind of exciting, you know, it's kind of fun. And I got that sense of excitement and joy out of the same problem like year after year, because I would forget how to do it, and then, you know, it'd be like, yeah, just, I would just struggle over it, and then, oh yeah, that's it. And then I'd realize, okay, yeah, I've done that before. And we actually had this experience just a couple weeks ago. That Mike asked me a question, and then I sort of was, you know, had to like think about it a little bit, and then we both realized at some point that we had done it before and talked about it before. And anyway, 4.2. One of the reasons I like it is that it's sort of neat. Like, there are a lot of little things that come up that once you sort of can wrap your head around them, there's just sort of neat results. Okay, so I'll try to like pass along some of what's fun, I think, about it as we go. And I want to go back to an example that I did when we talked about the Poisson random variable. So this is an example with emails. They were like randomly. It's not like every hour two emails come, but suppose, you know, they sort of randomly arrive at a rate of roughly 2 per hour. And I thought about this, or we thought about this before, in terms of the binomial random variable. You can sort of think of like the number of emails in 1 hour it's sort of like binomial with 60 minutes. Each minute has a 1 out of 30 chance of getting an email, of receiving an email. So mu equals np is 2. So, you know, kind of a typical hour, n times p is 2. Or you could think about it as, you could think of it as like binomial with seconds rather than minutes. Right? And so you have this idea that you're increasing n and letting and having p simultaneously go towards zero while keeping mu constant at 2, right? N times p is still 2. So mu is still 2. And then we know that as we let n go to infinity and p go to 0, this in the limit goes to a Poisson. So you can also think about this as like a Poisson with mu equals 2. So now we've sort of passed to continuous time rather than minutes or seconds or nanoseconds or whatever. We actually are just sort of continuous time. So we don't have really trials anymore. We just have this interval. We expect about 2 emails per hour. Okay, so in this context, I'd like to think about the waiting time until the first email arrives. So you can think of this similar sort of way. You could think about this as like in terms of the minutes, the number of minutes. What kind of distribution would that have? If you think about the number of minutes until the first email arrives. Yeah, good. It's going to be geometric. It's a waiting time. And what's the parameter going to be? What's the p, the probability of sort of success? One out of 30. Yeah. So you sort of think of this. It's the same p as this. This is 60 minutes. You divide the hour into 60 minutes. Each one has a 1 out of 30 chance of getting an email. And now, if you want to look at it in a slightly different way, and rather than fixing the number of minutes we're looking at 60. And counting how many emails, we're just going to sort of watch our inbox, maybe check it every minute. At the end of every minute, either we get an email or we don't. And you can kind of think of this waiting time then as just sort of you stop looking once you get an email. Okay. So you can think about it that way. Or if you want, you can think about it in terms of seconds. And that's going to be geometric with 1 over 1800. So you sort of think about it the same way. Like each of these 3600 seconds has a 1 out of 1800 chance of getting an email. And if we then instead look at it just like, you know, watch every second, you either get an email or you don't. You can think of it that way. And then maybe you can kind of guess what's coming next is to think about what happens if we move to continuous time. Okay, so if you move to continuous time, we get what's called an exponential. So and the parameter that's given is the rate. So it's this rate of 2 per hour in this case. Okay. So it's sort of like once you move to continuous time, you're just kind of continuously watching, and as soon as you stop, right? And it's no longer some number of seconds or some number of minutes. It's just this continuous stream where you either get an email or not. Okay, so let's think about what the density function of this thing is going to be. So first of all, observe that it is continuous, right? It could have any value. It could have any real number value. It's some, you know, amount of time. And to think about what the density function is going to be, I'm going to look at it this way. And I'm going to look at this a few different ways. And sort of one of the things I think is neat about 4.2 is there's a lot of stuff in here that you can look at in different ways, and it's just kind of interesting to look at it from different angles. So if we think about this exponential thing, let me just think about time marching along. And I want to think about, sort of similarly to that idea up there, you know, think about the probability of being in a tiny interval there. I'm going to call my random variable t. So I'm going to say t is exponential with parameter lambda. In that case, it's 2. You know, in the email case, it's 2, but we'll be a little bit more general. So we sort of start looking at time 0, and then here's time t and time t plus dt. So what I'm curious about is what's the chance that I get my first email in that little interval there, okay? Well, we could actually do this in terms of things we've already done. What this means, in order to get that in there, what do we know has to happen between time 0 and time t? No emails, right? So this is the probability of 0 emails by time t. And then we need to get an email like immediately, right? So email in that dt. Okay, so if you think about this, can you think of a way of finding that? Well, let me write this out. Like, all right, one more step out. Sort of just follow the multiplication rule here. Okay, so this is just shorthand for 0 emails by time t. Okay. So let's think about this first part, 0 emails by time t. How many emails should we expect to get by time t? Yeah, so some people are saying 2t. I'm being a little bit more general here and setting just using lambda in general. But yeah, if you think about the context of these emails, if I wait for like 1 hour, time equals 1, I should expect to get 2 emails, right? So in general, if I wait for time t, like half an hour or whatever, I expect lambda t emails. So this is sort of a little bit of a hint. What's the distribution of this? What's the distribution of the number of emails in here? It's Poisson, right? If we waited for an hour, we would have exactly this situation, right? If t is equal to an hour, we have exactly the situation where we have the number of emails that arrive as Poisson with mu equals 2. Now, we don't quite have that because I'm sort of being a little bit more general. I'm letting lambda be, you know, lambda, just something general, and then t is also kind of generic, right? So, but this is still Poisson, and it has expected value lambda times t, okay? The rate times the amount of time I wait, okay? All right, so to get 0 in there, you're used to sort of thinking of it as, maybe I'll just write it over to the side here. For Poisson, I'll call it n equals k is e to the minus mu to the k over k factorial. So mu is lambda t, k is 0 in this case. So I have e to the minus lambda t to the 0 over 0 factorial. 0 factorial is 1. Okay, so those are just going to cancel. I'm just going to get e to the minus lambda t. And now, to get this, well, if you think about this, what's going on here, at least intuitively by the way I've developed, I think you should feel like this doesn't matter, right? What happens, however many emails I get in this time interval, that is independent of what happens here. They're different time intervals. If you want to go all the way back to the, you know, kind of binomial situation, number of sixes in 100 die rolls is independent of what happens in the next die roll. You kind of think of it that way, right? So you have all these possibilities here. Whatever happens here is independent of what happens there. So I don't care about this. All I care about is getting an email in that little DT. So what's the chance of getting an email in that little DT? Well, it's you can think of it actually, you can think of it just doing this again, right? It's a little tiny interval, but it's still, you know, it's still, you can think of it as an interval, and we have some expected number of emails that should come in there. The expected number is lambda times DT, right? It's the again, just the rate times the width of that interval. So I could just write this out the same way with a DT instead of a T, right? Because, the width of that interval is DT, this tiny interval here. But now I'm going to get one of them, right? So it's lambda DT to the 1 over 1 factorial, okay? So you can think of it that way if you want. Okay, so what goes away? This is 1, this is 1, this is 1. So I'll leave the DT in here, but this part is kind of irrelevant. One way to think about that is this is something very small, right? E to something very small is basically 1. Okay, maybe I will throw it away, actually, right? E to the 0 is 1, so e to the something very small is approximately 1. So let's just leave it out. E to the minus lambda t, and I'll do this. E to the minus lambda t, lambda dt. So what does that tell us that the density function should be? Well, we know, you know, in general, this idea here that if you can find the probability of being in a little interval there, that's the density function times the width, right? So I know that f of t dt is the same as this. And I just found that was, and I'm going to put the lambda out in front. That's the usual way that it's written. Lambda e to the minus lambda t dt. And so f of t is just get rid of the dt's. Okay, so f of t okay so this is sort of a this is how the exponential is defined. So I've come at the exponential random variable just kind of playing with this situation, right, to sort of see, well, let's suppose we were just waiting for the first email in this kind of situation, what would we find the density function should be? But this is actually how the exponential is defined. So this is so the way the book approaches this is to define it and then to talk about the properties of it. So I've sort of come at it from the other direction, is sort of think about, well, what is it, and then what should the density function be? Okay? Okay. Any questions, thoughts on that? Yeah. Yes. There is. And I will talk about that a little bit today. You won't really see kind of a full version of that until we hit section 4.5. But yeah, I'll do a version of that that's sort of another way to think about this. I want to do one more thing, I think, and then I'll do that. Yeah, so just to back up just a second, I sort of said this, but I just want to kind of emphasize it. This is, in the same way that the Poisson and the binomial are closely related, the geometric and the exponential are closely related. And if you think about how we think about this probability even, it's very similar to the way that we think about the geometric. For the geometric, we think about like failure, 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 success. Q to the k minus 1, p. It's very much like this, right? This is like your q to the k minus 1 thing, and then this is like your p. You get, success right at the end there. So this is the this is the no emails, no successes, nothing happening, and then this is like your success part. Okay? So I just wanted to reinforce that similarity, 'cause I think a lot of times when you think about the Poisson and exponential continuous time world, it's if you're like confused about stuff, a lot of times you can sort out some of your confusion by thinking about the binomial and the geometric. Okay? If you can think about how the what would be true for the binomial and for the geometric, then usually the same properties are true for the Poisson and the exponential. And one example of me doing that is when I was talking about like, okay, if we want to find the chance of getting a hit in there, given no hits in here, I kind of thought about, well, what would be true of the binomial, right? For the binomial, if I had like no sixes or something like that, if I rolled a bunch of dice and got no sixes here, it wouldn't change the chance that I would get a six here. Okay, so I'm sort of thinking about this as like the independence sort of works in the same way as you would think of like successive die rolls or something like that. Okay? Okay. Okay. I'll talk a little bit more actually about that independence idea in a bit. Now, I want to do one quick thing with this, which is, to be a density, this should be true, right? Total area should be one. So just really quick, let's do that. Actually, I just need a little room here. So this is only defined for positive values of t, right? You start waiting at time 0. So when we do this integral, we're just talking about the integral from 0 to infinity. And if we integrate this, what do we get? We get negative e to the minus lambda t, right? Think about what happens when we take the derivative of this. Negative lambda pops out in front, the negative signs cancel, and that gives us the lambda. Okay, the derivative of this is that, and evaluate that at 0 infinity. And technically we should be evaluating between 0 and b and taking the limit as b goes to infinity, something like that, but let's just see what happens here. If we let t go to positive infinity here, e to the minus infinity goes to 0, right? Maybe I should graph this. This looks like this. And lambda is the height at 0. If I plug in 0 here, this is 1. I guess I should think here. If I plug in 0 as t, the height is lambda. So it starts at lambda and then it dies off according to the exponential curve. Okay, so back to this. We let t go to infinity. This goes to 0. And so we have 0 minus a negative. Right, minus negative e to the minus lambda 0. E to the 0 is 0. Sorry, e to the 0 is 1. So we get 1. Okay? Which better be true if it's going to be a density function. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay. So now, if you think about the geometric, one of the things that's kind of cool about the geometric is the tail sum, right? When you find the expectation of a geometric, you can use a tail sum formula because the probability that a geometric is bigger than a certain value is very simple. You have the same property with the exponential, which is that the probability that T is bigger than T, well, that's all that means is that you haven't gotten any emails yet, right? You're still waiting. Okay, so this is just like thinking about the geometric tail probability. The probability that a geometric is bigger than K, bigger than or equal to K, means that you must have had K minus one failures, right? So it's like Q to the K. This is like what I'm going to write is sort of the equivalent of Q to the K minus one. And it's just what I've done before. It's just this, right? This is the probability of zero emails by time T. That's exactly what this means. I'm still waiting. So this is e to the minus lambda t. Okay. So you can think about this in terms of the density function. This is this is part of what Alon was alluding to, is that this e to the minus lambda t, that's this probability. And you can also think about that as an integral from t to infinity of lambda e to the minus lambda t, dt. Okay, and if you check that, it works, right? So let me not set it equal yet. I'll say, or you could think of it, this probability, as t to infinity lambda e to the minus lambda t, dt. Okay, so if we do this integral to try to find the probability just based on the density function, well, we integrate, we get, just what I got before, except I have a different bound. This is minus e to the minus lambda t evaluated at t and infinity. Well, what happens here? I just get, again, at infinity, as I go towards infinity, this goes to 0. 0 minus negative e to the minus lambda t. Right? And so maybe I'm a little bit sloppy here. I usually try to have a different dummy variable for integration than the bound, but you sort of this t is a it's kind of a dummy variable, right, that I'm integrating with respect to. I'm plugging in a particular value which happens to be the same thing. So this comes out to be e to the minus lambda t, right? So same thing. Okay, so you can sort of think about this in terms of the Poisson. This is thinking about this probability in terms of what's going on with the Poisson, or you can think about it in terms of the density function. So you could figure out this probability without knowing any calculus, right? If you had done section 3.5, you could do this, right? You could think about what's the probability of zero emails between time 0 and time t. It's that probability. Okay? So, questions? Okay. And again, this is sort of, you think of this intuitively as being like a geometric q to the k minus 1 sort of deal, where you have no successes up to that time. Okay. So just to play with this a little bit, any questions, thoughts? Okay, just to play with this a little bit, let's find the expected value. Any guesses? So let's say we think about this example with the emails, and emails come roughly 2 per hour. If emails come roughly 2 per hour, how long do you think you should have to wait to get an email? Half an hour, I think. I mean, you could think different things. But if you sort of think long run, emails come about every half hour, right? So if I just sort of start now, there's nothing special about right now, roughly should take about half an hour till I get an email. Okay. And that turns out to be right. Okay. So let's see, like, mathematically how that works. So one of the I didn't write it down in terms of section 4.1, but when you find expectation for something continuous, you integrate over, wherever the random variable is defined, over all the possible values. The value itself times times this. So this is sort of like, you can think about this as like summing up x times probability x equals x. This is kind of an infinitesimal probability of getting a particular value. So for this case, we draw a picture. we're essentially taking values of t and multiplying by their infinitesimal probabilities, okay? And then integrating it all out. Okay. So then, I'm sorry, this I should be consistent here. This should all be t's. Okay. So then this is 0 to infinity t e to the minus lambda, sorry, t times lambda e to the minus lambda t dt. Okay. And I'll do a little quick substitution here. Let u equal t, du equals dt, dv is equal to, I mean, this is a fairly common integral, so maybe you just know this. It's possible. All right, so let me just sort this out, this little uv substitution. So, so what I have is udv, and so this is going to be v du, negative e to the minus lambda t. I'm sorry, I just kind of wrote this out of my notes, but let me talk through it. So what we have is udv, right, is t times lambda e to the minus lambda t dt. Take the derivative of that, we get dt. Integrate this, we get minus e to the minus lambda t, right? So then what we're going to have here is uv, I forgot a t here, minus t e to the minus lambda t. So this is uv minus integral of v du, and v du is minus e to the minus lambda t dt. Yeah, okay. Okay, so what happens here, let me write out one more step here. So this is going to be, when I integrate this, the minus sign is going to go away. One of the minus signs is going to go away. Okay. So integral of this is this. Or if you want to think about it the other way, derivative of this, I get a minus lambda out in front, cancels the lambda, gives me the minus sign. Okay. So that's that. And now what happens here, you can, if you want, think about this in terms of L'Hopital or whatever, and as you go to infinity, I mean, the kind of intuitive way to think about it is that the exponential, e to the minus lambda t, goes to zero much faster than t goes to positive infinity, right? So if you want to, you know, do that right, you can use L'Hopital and take the derivative of, you look at this as t, let's make a little aside here. Look at this as t divided by e to the minus lambda t. Take the derivative of top and bottom. Well, this goes to 1, and then you have just a minus lambda e to the minus lambda t here on the bottom. When you let t go to the infinity there, then this goes to 0, right? This goes to... I'm sorry, yeah, okay, right. That's why it's not working. Okay, right. Yeah. So when t goes to infinity, this goes to positive infinity. The whole thing goes to zero, right? Okay. So the whole thing goes to zero. Again, intuitively, the way I think about this is just that, you know, this the exponential goes to zero faster than that goes to positive infinity. At zero, the exponential part is 1, and t is zero. So this whole thing goes away. At positive infinity, it goes away because of the exponential part. At zero, it goes away because of the t. Okay. So let me just get this. And if we let t go to positive infinity here, then this goes to zero. And then we get minus a negative 1 over lambda e to the minus lambda times zero, right? And e to the minus zero is 1, so we get 1 over lambda, okay? Which is what I was sort of saying intuitively you might think, right? Lambda is 2 emails per hour, you sort of expect an email to come every half hour, so the expected waiting time is half an hour. Right? So what's that like for the geometric? Yeah, for the geometric, expected value is 1 over p. So it has a sort of similar idea, right, that it's sort of you can think of P as sort of the rate at which the successes come. Each trial has a P chance of getting a success. It's sort of like, you know, each trial has that kind of a rate. So then 1 over P gives you, when the successes come often, you don't have to wait as long, right? So when the rate is big, the waiting time is small. Okay? So questions about that? Okay, so the variance, I'm not going to do. It's basically, you know, you just have to integrate an extra step. If you want to find expected value of t squared, put a t squared there. You just have to do this substitution again. And I'll just tell you, and this is in the book, the SD is also 1 over lambda. anyone remember what the SD of the geometric is? You probably have it written on a sheet of paper. But yeah, it's the square root of Q over P, right? So this is not quite the same. Why is this this? Like, how might you think about this situation? Yeah, so what's happening, if you think about how we've arrived at this from the geometric, if you sort of build from the geometric, take a limit, what's happening is you're letting P get smaller and smaller. That means Q is getting closer and closer to 1. So if you sort of think about it, you know, intuitively, what's happening in that as we approach that limit? Well, since Q is going to 1, we don't need it, right? We just have the same form. So for geometric, again, it's square root of Q over P. Since square root of Q, essentially we've entered a world where Q has gone to 1, square root of Q is sort of 1. Okay, so you can think of the SD that way, that that's why that has that form, and it is sort of analogous to the geometric still. And exponential has this sort of interesting property that the expected value and the standard deviation are the same. Okay? Any questions? Yeah. Yes. Yes, you can. Yeah, that'll give you the same answer. And we'll do that in 4.5. Yeah, so we'll sort of do the continuous analogy to the Taylor-Swan formula when we hit 4.5. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. So, that's that. Okay, so that's a pretty good time for a little break. This is sort of the fundamentals, and I'm going to get into, well, I guess this is a few more fundamentals, then we'll get into some sort of interesting examples. Okay, so a little break. Okay, so let's get started again. I think, I don't know if you've heard this about this class. I might have mentioned it towards the beginning of the class. This class has sort of a reputation of getting harder now. Isn't that exciting? Does that make you feel great? I think the sense in which it gets harder is that it's a little bit harder in Chapter 4 to make things concrete when you're doing like integrals and using density functions and stuff. It's a little bit easier to deal with the more concrete world of like, okay, what's the probability of this? It's a little bit, I think, easier to deal with than moving into the continuous calculus world. I mean, if you're like, math, statistics, probability, are all sort of like learning languages, I think, in a certain way, that when you become fluent, there's not that much difference between thinking about, you know, derivatives and integrals and the discrete equivalence and that kind of stuff. But I think as you're developing that fluency, as you're learning like a new part of probability language, sort of, I think it is good to try to connect back to the discrete part and try to think in those terms. That's, I sort of have emphasized a couple times or mentioned a couple times, I think it's good to try to think about, okay, binomial, geometric, when you're thinking about exponential and, Poisson and exponential. So to develop that intuition, I think, there are only two pages in this book that I know offhand, like what's on those pages. And that's pages 288 and 289. They're in this section. Pages 288 and 289, 288 does discrete world, 289 does continuous world. I think it's worthwhile, like, you know, kind of meditating on those two pages a little bit, like kind of look at them and say, okay, well, that's the discrete part and this is the continuous part and so it's related. And I think that will help you, like, transition a little bit more easily into the continuous world of chapter 4. And so as we get in chapter 5, after spring break, chapter 5, there's this other thing that happens, which is that we start talking about two random variables, like joint distributions and things like that. So if you remember, like we did a little bit with joint distributions already for discrete things. The thing that makes chapter 5 hard is that when you're doing, you know, for like joint distribution, what do? For discrete things, we draw this grid, right? And think about like the probabilities of x equals x, y equals y. Well, for continuous case, you're now talking about, rather than these density functions, you're talking about surfaces. So x and y are two-dimensional, but then you have some surface over there. And there's this level of abstraction that I think is hard because you can't really draw pictures anymore that are, you know, really represent things. So that's, I think, you know, just a little aside about why I think this part of the class, some people feel like it sort of, you know, gets weird and hard, is those two things. So again, you know, I'll try to, as we get into, get through chapter 4 and get into chapter 5, I'll try to make that as gentle as possible. But that's why I think that these things seem hard. Okay, so what I wanted to talk about, sort of used already, this idea that there's independence between what goes on in this time interval and what goes on in that time interval. And you can think about this a few different ways. One way to think about this that I think is kind of nice is, I actually redraw that. This is all under the, I don't know, heading of the what's called the memoryless property. Okay. Which essentially means that what happened in the past, we can forget about. It doesn't affect the chances of what's going to happen in the future. So it's just this idea that if we have no emails in this time, it doesn't matter, we can just sort of start over. And if you want to think about this this probability here, another way to think about it is this. We have the probability of getting zero emails in this interval, right, is, or I guess I should think about this, say it this way. So if you want to let time march from time zero to time t, you know, you have this density function marching along. Once you hit time t, you can stop time and start over. Okay. So one way to think about this is like, you know, we've gone along here and gotten no emails in here. So that's like, it's sort of like q to the k minus 1, right? If you think about it in geometric language. In this language, it's e to the minus lambda t is the probability of failing so far, okay? But regardless of what happens there, once we hit time t, we can start over. So one way to think about this t plus dt is that we sort of start over at lambda, okay? So this is, that's another way to think about this as why this should be lambda dt, right? That's what this is. This is just the lambda dt that gets stuck on the end here, is the chance of getting a little hit in there, you know, having gotten to this point, right? So the reason why I'm drawing it this way is that I think it's sort of a neat property that it's memoryless. This is not the way the book writes it, but just because I've already talked about it in that context, I thought I'd draw this picture. Again, you know, you sort of think about time marching along. Once you hit time t, you sort of start over. Okay. The way the book presents this is to say this. The way they define the memoryless property is that the probability that t is bigger than t plus s, given t is bigger than t, is equal to the probability that t is bigger than s. So what does that mean? That means that, so t bigger than t means that nothing's happened yet, right? No successes, no hits, no nothing. So if you think about time, 0, t, t plus s, this distance is s. What this is saying is that the once you've gotten to time t, like you've gotten to here, you're living in a universe where you start time over here. Well, starting from there, the probability that you don't get any hits by time t plus s is just the same as if you had started time over here and just observed no hits by time s. Okay? So when you see this t bigger than s, this is like, the way I think about this is no hits in interval of length s. Right? So when you see t bigger than t, you sort of think, well, what does that mean? That means that there aren't any hits by time t. This means no hits by time t plus s. So again, the left side means, okay, we're given that nothing's happened by time t. What's the chance that we manage to get to this time without getting any successes? Well, it's just like if we started over and got no hits in an interval of that length, okay? So that's the way the book describes the memoryless property. And you can think of it, if you want, with dt is equal to s, basically, right? So the probability of getting no hits, I mean, I'm thinking about actually getting a hit here, but you could think about the reciprocal, or the, not the reciprocal, the complement. You could think about this saying, no hits by time t plus dt, given no hits by time t, would be the same as the probability of getting no hits in an interval of length dt starting time from right there. Okay. So, anyway, it sort of connects all that. Okay? Any questions about this? Yeah. No. Well, from this, you can kind of apply it to anything. It's yeah. So what we're talking about is just the exponential. So if you wanted to find the probability that, well, how should I say this? Well, it's a waiting time. So if you have a hit, then you're done. So yeah. So I guess yeah. If you want to just think about the memoryless property of the exponential, you sort of have to do it in terms of having no hits. But yeah, we'll get to this. I think end of today. This whole thing is often referred to as a Poisson process. And so this idea of like starting time at zero and then you have like emails come at successive times, sometimes called a Poisson process. And the Poisson process itself is memoryless in the sense that any two different time intervals are independent. So you might remember that from the Poisson random variable, that if you have like Poissons defined for different time intervals, they're independent. That's part of what makes a Poisson Poisson. Independence between like different parts. Okay? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. All right. So then let's do finally an example. So I'm imagining three people, Xavier, Yolanda, and Zachary. So I can use X, Y, and Z. They go to a bank with two tellers. And the what I'll call the service times. So service time is how long a person takes with the teller, right? So from the time you walk up and start talking to the time you leave. Okay, that's a service time. And this is not really realistic, but let's say that these service times are exponential lambda. So, you know, why is this not realistic? Well, presumably, at least you should hope, if you're standing behind someone and they've been there a long time, you hope that it's more likely that they're going to leave. The exponential says that whatever happened in the past is irrelevant. The amount of time that you've waited for this person to be done so far has no bearing on how long you have to wait from now on, right? So you sort of hope that this is not the case. But it might sort of feel like this, okay? So anyway, this is sort of maybe an oversimplification, but this kind of feature of the exponential, like I said, is this memoryless idea that it doesn't matter how long you've waited, you know, the future is independent of the past. Okay. Right, so let's say Xavier and Yolanda get there like just before Zachary, so they get to the tellers first. So Xavier and Yolanda start first. And what I'm interested in is so Z waits until one of the tellers becomes available, and then walks up and starts getting helped. So my first question is, what's the probability that Zachary is the first person to leave? Oh, sorry, the last person to leave. So we can do this just purely intuitively. I don't need to do any math to do this. If you have internalized the ideas behind the exponential, if you think about this the right way, the answer is kind of immediate. Yeah. That's right. So why is that one half? Well, what happens is that at some point, either Xavier leaves or Yolanda leaves, okay? And then Zachary steps up. And then we can start time over again, right? So we start time over from that period from there, and it doesn't matter, doesn't matter how long the other person has been helped. There's the symmetry here. Like, say Yolanda leaves. Xavier is still being helped. Zachary starts being helped. They both now, you can think of it as starting time over. They both have the same rate from then, of how long you expect them to have to wait. Okay, so this is a half, and it's this. I like to think about this example because it sort of highlights what the memoryless property is all about. Right, you sort of have to forget about what happened once you have this new have the circumstance that Xavier and Zachary are standing there, waiting, then you can just sort of think about time starting over. Okay? Then the second thing, we do need to do a little bit of math. I want to find the expected waiting time until Zachary leaves the bank. Any thoughts on how we might do that? It's possible you could just see it, but I probably not. Yeah. Did Bet you have no. Okay. Yeah, good. So you can think about this as the sum of two parts. The part where Zachary has to wait until he actually is being helped, and then from there, how long he has to wait from then, right? Yeah. Maybe. Two over lambda. 2 over lambda would be sad because if there were only one bank teller, well, so 2 over lambda would be longer than the waiting time for one person, right? So if Yolanda just stayed there forever, right? Then, and you just never left, and you just had to wait for Xavier, then you'd expect 1 over lambda. So 2 over lambda would be even worse than that, right? So it better be at least, the first part better at least be less than 1 over lambda. 1 over lambda is the expected value of an exponential. Well, but hopefully it's a little bit better than that. But you have this advantage that, one of them might leave before the other one, right? Just x, yes, just x will be 1 over lambda. Yeah. If correct. Yeah. No, that's right. If in this like hypothetical where I think this is what you're saying is that if Yolanda stays there forever, then we'd expect 1 over lambda to wait for x, and then another 1 over lambda to wait for z, right? So this setup should be a little bit better than that, right? Okay. Okay. So the way to think about this then is to think about I'll let x and y be the waiting times for Xavier and Yolanda, and then z be the time for Zachary from when they start. So I'm going to say this. So this thing, waiting until Zachary leaves, is equal to the minimum of x and y. So whichever one of those, is smaller, then Zachary's going to step up, and then we have z, okay? Where x, y, z are all exponential lambda. And they're all independent. So that's sort of the, I don't know, mathy way to set it up. Okay, so we want expectation of this. So expectation of this, we can think of as, expected weight, total weight is equal to expected value of the minimum of these two plus expected value of z. And that part's easy, right? Expected value of z is just 1 over lambda. Okay, so the expected value of the minimum, well, let's think about this. Let's think about I'll let m be the minimum, okay, just for shorthand. This minimum of x and y is going to be, I'm going to call m. And let's think about this. Let's think about the probability the minimum is bigger than t. Okay? So minimums are often easier, right? Minimums are often easier to deal with. So what's that going to be? In order for the minimum to be bigger than t, what does that tell you about x and y? Yeah, they both have to be bigger than t, right? If it essentially means that neither one of them has left yet, right? If the minimum is bigger than t, that means that at time t, they're still both there, right? So this is going to be probability that x is bigger than t and y is bigger than t. And they're independent, so I can deal with these separately, and this is a probability that maybe you're starting to get familiar with. It's e to the minus lambda t. Probably we haven't seen anything yet, right? And again, e to the minus lambda t. E to the minus 2 lambda t. Well, that's sort of interesting. Why is that interesting? What does that tell us about m? The distribution of m. For an exponential, with rate lambda, the probability that an exponential with rate lambda is bigger than t is e to the minus lambda t. So we have this random variable, and the probability that it's bigger than t is e to the minus 2 lambda t. So what does that tell us about m? It's exponential. It has the same form, right? But it doesn't have the same thing there. So m itself is exponential with parameter 2 lambda. So, you know, you can think about, you know, this idea here, right? Probability that t is bigger than t is e to the minus lambda t. Another way to think about this is if you want to think about 0 t, think about kind of the underlying Poisson, the number of, this is like having a Poisson random variable where the rate is 2 lambda, and this is the probability of getting 0 hits by time t, where you have a rate of 2 lambda. Right? It's like e to the minus mu to the 0 over 0 factorial is the probability of a Poisson getting 0 hits in there, where the Poisson has, the Poisson has expected value 2 lambda t. Right? So it's like the rate times the time there. Okay? So you can sort of, again, think about this in terms of Poisson or in terms of the exponential. Okay, so that's sort of an interesting property for the exponential. The minimum of two independent exponentials, if they have the same parameter, is an exponential. You can stick a 2 there. What if I had 3 exponentials? I want to find the minimum of 3 exponentials. I would have 3 terms, right? I just multiply like that times that again. I get 3 of them. I get an exponential with 3 lambda. So if you have more, you know, when you take a minimum of a bunch of exponentials, it turns out that the minimum of exponentials is exponential. Okay, so sort of interesting property. If we want to connect that back to our emails, brief aside with emails, we can think of like non-spam emails and spam emails and all emails. Okay? If you want to think about waiting till the first non-spam happens, waiting till the first spam happens, or the minimum of the two. This is the minimum of, you can think about this as being x, y. X the time for the first non-spam, y is the time for the first non-spam. The minimum of those two is, you can just think as the waiting time for any email, right? And in terms of like the underlying Poisson, what's going on there is that you can add the two rates. Okay? So essentially here, reason why this is 2 lambda is that it's lambda plus lambda when you multiply those out. And in terms of this, if you just waited for an email of any kind, like say these come at like, I don't know, 2. I want that up to 2, so let's make it this. So this is like lambda 1 equals 0.5, lambda 2 equals 1.5. Okay? So we have like half an email on average per hour and 1.5 spam emails per hour. Then, what rate do all the emails come at? The rate that all emails come at is lambda 2, right? So this is like lambda 1 plus lambda 2 equals 2. Okay, so if you want to think about this in terms of the minimum, you can do that. The minimum of these two exponentials, you can think about this way, or you can think about just like intuitively, well, what do I mean by the minimum? It means that I'm going to wait for anything. So you can just think about, well, if I wait for anything, I can just add the rates together. The rate of any email is the sum of those two rates. Okay, And that waiting time is just, you know, a waiting time that's exponential with that rate. All right? So that's a little bit of a, you know, different way of thinking about this minimum problem. Okay, any questions on that? Okay, so let's finish the problem. And Alon's intuition is right that now expectation of the minimum is 1 over 2 lambda. So E weight is 1 over 2 lambda plus 1 over lambda. Okay? So if you want, I guess you can put that over a common denominator. This is, what, 3 over 2 lambda? Okay? So it's, you know, it's kind of in between those two cases we were talking about, right? If Yolanda took forever and never left, then we would expect to have to wait 1 over lambda plus 1 over lambda. It would be 2 over lambda. If Zachary just was able to step up immediately, it would just be 1 over lambda. So it's sort of in between, right? Okay. Questions on that? Any thoughts? Okay. Let me see. Is there anything I can do really quick here? Yeah, I'll just write down for sort of food for thought. I'll talk about this again, but this underlying thing that's happening with waiting for hits along here, like I said, it's called a Poisson process, and you can think of it in kind of two ways. Count arrivals in fixed time interval. And that counting the arrivals in a fixed time interval would give you a Poisson with expected value lambda t, rate times time. You can also think of the time between arrivals or hits or whatever. Times between arrivals are independent exponentials with parameter lambda, okay? And this is very much analogous to independent Bernoulli trials, kind of marching along. And you can think of the independent Bernoulli trials both in terms of the binomial NP is equal to the number of successes in fixed number of trials. Okay, so that's very much like this Poisson idea. Poisson and binomial have this relationship. Or you could also think about it in terms of the geometric. So waiting times until successes until successes are geometric. Okay. So that's again very analogous to the exponential. These are independent also. Okay. So if you want to think about like these sequences of like failures and successes, binomial, you can think of it in terms of binomial or geometric, and similarly the Poisson process, you can think about these different ways. So again, pages 288, 289 detail a lot of these analogies between discrete and continuous, so you might take a look at those. Okay, so I haven't finished 4.2. I'll finish it on Tuesday and then get into 4.4. Okay. Bye.